In this podcast series, we're not just trying to change Africa's narrative, we are changing it. Because Africa leads, Africa excels, and Africa inspires. The focus on our continent's poverty, inequality, violence, and lack of development is definitely out of sync. When you compare it to other continents who have the same, but also we hear voices and see images of growth, development of economic and emerging markets, all leading to investment and ultimate self-reliance. So help me welcome guests from Africa and all over the world invested in the rising of Africa. The time for Africa's rising is now. The world has no choice but to let us rise because, as the youngest of all people, we are the future of the world. So, from Africa to the world, this is Yavi Madure.
Welcome, Ms. Charlotte Lobe, to From Africa to the World. Now, you are literally hot out of the Generation Equality Forum. That has been, I think it's the most globally spoken about event in the last 20 years or 25 years since Beijing, but specifically because of the massive amount of discussion, number one, but number two, the commitments that were made by governments, private sector, and organizations across the world. Nothing like this has ever happened before. So, firstly, let's go back a step and tell us, what is Generation Equality and what is Generation Equality Forum?
Thank you very much for that question. Let me start by saying that there is history to why the global community is converging in Paris today. And the history to that is that 45 years ago, the UN organized the first World Conference on Women that was held in Mexico. And the purpose of that conference was to look at how best the UN within its systems can push the gender equality agenda. Now, since the 1975 conference, the UN organized a second conference that was held in Copenhagen in 1980. And the 1980 conference again considered what was discussed in Mexico in 1975 and thought it would be important for it to, amongst others, look at how best it can utilize the gender equality space to also develop some solidarity programs, particularly solidarity with the oppressed women of the world at the time. And the oppressed women of the world at the time included women of South Africa, women of Namibia, etc. And so the Copenhagen conference resolved to have a third world conference that was held in Nairobi. And the importance of the Nairobi conference was that the manner in which it was organized was about solidarity, not only gender equality. So on one hand, they discussed issues of gender equality and women's empowerment, but the better part of the conference focused on solidarity work and how the UN within its systems would use its power to show solidarity or stand in solidarity with the suffering people of the world. Again, of course, South Africa and Namibia were at the high levels of their agenda. Following the 1985 Nairobi conference, it took the UN 10 years to organize the Fourth World Conference. During the 10 years, part of the things that had to happen was for women organizations, feminist organizations around the world to think about how best we can have a program or a blueprint that is implementable, a blueprint that can inform how countries, how the global community can look at gender equality, hence the Beijing Conference. In the Beijing Conference, as you are now aware, the Beijing Conference developed a declaration that, amongst others, called on the global community to move with speed in ensuring gender equality and women's empowerment. But on top of the declaration, it came with a 12-point plan for action. And through the plan for action, through the platform for action, the Beijing decided that it was gonna thread out 12 priority areas that will look at issues of education, at issues of women, I mean, domestic violence, etc. But one central tenet of that conference was the need for the global community to look at the status and the situations of the girl child, particularly because when Beijing converged, most countries, particularly in sub-Saharan Africa, had serious challenges to take girl children through education because as a result of our cultures, some in our continent felt that, not even our continent, even in Asia and elsewhere, they felt that educating a girl child was a waste of time because you're educating them to be married to other families and therefore your family was not going to gain anything from educating a girl child. Now, this is the reason why Beijing prioritized the issue of girl children. 26 years on, this is where we are. Since the World Conference, there's been a number of calls by feminist organizations, by women organizations, by governments, including our own, for the UN to consider organizing the fifth World Conference on Women. When Minister Batabile Dlamini was Minister of Women, when she attended CSW 65, part of the things that she had raised in that CSW 63, she had requested that it was about time for the UN to consider a mechanism wherein we can think anew of the global gender agenda. And this is where the generation equality emerges from. Because following these meetings, following these engagements on the need for a fifth world conference, but also taking into account the economic climate that all of us are going through, including the UN, it would not have been possible to convene women in a world conference. Rather, it was felt that we use technology to try and converge in a manner wherein we can take into account the work that was done since Beijing, but also take into account developments that happened since Beijing. You'll notice that part of the developments, one is that during the 26 years, there were discussions on climate change and impact of climate change on women and girls. There's been discussions on the peace and security agenda. And in 2000, we had the adoption of Resolution 1325 of the UN Security Council that focuses on women, peace and security. You've had Millennium Development Goals, now Sustainable Development Goals. Now, you needed a platform to take all of these developments into account. But as we do this, we notice that the nagging clause of inequality continue in the world like never before. The manifestation of patriarchy has meant that even though we have this wonderful platform for action, however, the situation and the status of women remain the same. In some settings around the world, we found situations wherein the situation of women is even worse as a result of conflict, as a result of poverty, as a result of a number of challenges that are faced with the global community today. Now, coming to your question, what is Generation Equality Forum? The Generation Equality Forum is a platform through which the global community can develop new ways of ensuring gender equality, or it is an acceleration plan for gender equality and women's empowerment. We are hoping that through Generation Equality Forum, we can be able to look at the challenges that are faced by women in the world. Hence, part of the work that has happened since 2018 when this work started was to look at how do we refine the 12 priority areas identified by Beijing and consolidate work. Now, we thought it would be important for us to consolidate them into about seven thematic areas, and the seven thematic areas focuses on feminist movement and leadership, feminist action for climate change, GBV, bodily harm and sexual reproductive health and rights, economic justice, as well as women, peace and security, and humanitarian action, which cuts across all these other Action Coalition. So that is what the Generation Equality is all about. It is about young women saying to world leaders today that I am not going to be part of a world that is unequal. I am not, my reality is not the reality of my mother or my grandmother. My reality is different. And my reality is that I will work for a world that is equal, where we are treated the same, where I am able to earn the same salary as my male counterpart, where my work in the care economy is recognized, where productive resources around the world, including finance, land, etc., can be used to empower me, not only because I am a woman, but because I'm also part of the citizens of the world. So that is what GF is all about.
So there were lots of commitments made, governments, private sector, public sector, civil society, the list goes on. South Africa and representing Southern Africa and considering that there was no other African country that had come forward as such to be able to make those kind of commitments, being the focal point, what was South Africa's commitments? And we bear in mind that South Africa, you know, for the most part or for a large part, looks at opportunities to be able to collectively bring in the continent as and when they can. So what were some of those commitments that SA made, and what are your, what was the driving reasons behind those commitments that that South Africa made?
Thank you very much. On economic justice and rights, it may be that as the leaders as of the Economic Justice and Rights Action Coalition, we might have been one of the countries from Global South, from the continent that made commitments. But let me congratulate Kenya, because Kenya have made beautiful commitments, concrete, transformative on GBV. I have now, I just before this interview, as part of the Women, Peace and Security and Humanitarian Action, I've seen Sierra Leone committing, I've seen Namibia committing. So there's a number of African countries that have committed on a number of action coalitions, and I wish to congratulate them all. I may not have time to mention all of them. I mentioned Kenya because we are commitment makers in that action coalition. I mentioned Sierra Leone as well as Namibia because we are also commitment makers in women, peace and security. But coming to economic justice and rights, South Africa committed first and foremost that we will implement the 40% preferential procurement for women-owned businesses. And the reason for this is because we want to integrate women into the economic mainstream. And we are also saying that apart from us committing 40% domestically, we'll continue to advocate for 30% in the continent. And as you are aware, this is a decision that has already been taken by the AU earlier this year. Now, the one thing that we need to do as part of our advocacy work as South Africa is to try and work with other African countries in making this a reality, so that by 2026, as the continent, we are able to look at how the 30% in the continent and 40% in the country has impacted on women's empowerment. But on top of that, we are also advocating for 30% procurement in the world. And the reason for this is that if we want to transform trade relations, we need concrete actions that will transform trade relations. We cannot only talk about 40% or 30% in the continent and not think about the situation of women in Afghanistan, and not think about the situation of women in Mexico, and not think about the situation of women elsewhere in the world. And hence, we are advocating for this 30%. We are for a transformation of trade relations, and we believe that if we are to look at the persona of Charlotte Matweke, she gives us a comfort of what it means for, or what a woman who is empowered can do for her community, can do for her country, but can also do for the world. This is the reason why part of our commitments is what we call the Charlotte Maxeke African Women's Economic Justice and Rights Initiative. Through this initiative, we are hoping that we can have young people in the continent be trained on economic justice and rights, but particularly focusing on issues of trade at the global level, because we have noted that trade relations in most cases are areas that most of our African children are not taught to embrace as part of the careers that they are doing. We appreciate that today we have the SG of the WTO coming from the continent, and the Charlotte Maxeke program is aimed as producing more SGs of the WTO through this Charlotte Maxeke Africa Future Leadership Development Program. One thing I like about this work is that it is grounding our young people on Pan-African principles. It's unlike us taking our young people to Europe and learning the European way of doing things. We are bringing them to the continent and saying to them, through this program, try and develop solutions that are Africa-specific, that are informed by Africa challenges. And as you do this, understand that we can be as successful as we can be. You can go to Harvard, you can go to University of Manchester. At the end of it all, we have an obligation of coming back to the continent and ensuring that we reconstruct and build our continent. So that is the first part of the program. The second part focuses on the awards. I am excited about a possibility of women's awards that acknowledges the role that women here in the continent and in the diaspora, and even women elsewhere, are playing in gender equality and women's empowerment in the continent of Africa.